Maharishit, which is better known as Genesis, not as accurately known. It means in the beginning. 17, Yahweh is telling us about his covenant. And twice he says that he wants us to observe it. Then he tells us that circumcision is going to be used as the sign of the covenant that will help us understand the covenant. So if your issue with circumcision is that you think it's mutilation, then if you think that if your issue with circumcision is Pauline, to say that you're circumcised, then you then faith in his gospel won't do you any good, you may want to rethink that. God has said he chose circumcision and only circumcision as a very specific sign that would help us remember and, more importantly, understand the covenant. So, it's not random. I'm unaware of any other sign of the covenant. You've read the Torah, Kirk. Are you aware of any other sign of the covenant?
There is no other sign of the covenant.
If Yahweh says that he chose circumcision to help us understand and to help us remember the covenant, would you assume that there's something about circumcision that will help us understand and remember the covenant?
Absolutely. I mean, what other conclusion would you draw?
So wouldn't it be reasonable, if you wanted to be part of this covenant, that you would take a moment and reflect and say, okay, what is it about circumcision that will help me understand and remember the covenant? Wouldn't you think that'd be reasonable?
Yes, sir.
You know, public radio here, I'm discussing the skin at the tip of the male reproductive organ. It is territory that is fraught with peril in terms of a discussion. But since Yahweh chose circumcision to be the sign of the covenant that would help us remember the covenant and understand it, and it's the one and only sign that will help us understand and remember the covenant, I think we have an obligation, and I don't mean that in the sense of obey, but in the sense of, is there any other rational response to this, any other sensible response other than to say, why? What? How? Remember, Scott, a few days ago, told us that there were 7 question words in English where the word itself was a full sentence.
Yes.
And we went through a number of them. I don't think we got to the last two. But why aren't more people asking why?
Mm-hmm.
How is circumcision a sign that helps us understand and remember the covenant? Have you been part of any discussion outside of our family here?
No.
Where somebody has said, you know, this is important. This is the one and only sign of the one and only covenant. It's the one and only way to relate to Yahweh, to know him, and to engage in a relationship with him. And it has but one sign that is devoted to helping us understand.
No, people take positions on it, but they don't discuss it.
Or what it represents, or why he may have chosen it.
Mm-hmm. They never discuss it.
You know, it's interesting. God doesn't tell us why he chose it, does he?
Well, you can draw the conclusion, though. I mean,
absolutely. He doesn't tell us. You know, if he tells us it's a sign to help us understand and remember, then it is our responsibility
right.
to figure it out.
Yeah.
And if he didn't tell us in so many words, then you would have to assume, since he is a master communicator, that he wouldn't choose a sign that we couldn't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
That he would give us enough information that we could figure it out.
Sure. And that's the case so often and throughout the Torah.
Yes. And that beyond the fact that we should rightly assume that he gave us the capacity to figure it out, to think it through, that he gave us the evidence we would need to do the research to observe so that we would come to know and thereby understand, but that he wants us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He wants us to think about it. He wants us to discuss it. He wants us engaged in this kind of a dialogue, because when we participate in the process of coming to know and understanding and thinking, we grow. That's how we grow.
Right. You know, I even looked up the root word to the word mul, which is just ML, and it has three words they translate it to speak, a word, and continue as a continuation.
Well, so to be able to continue, which would mean to be immortal,
and it's
based upon the word.
Word that was spoken.
Or it could be the immortal word.
Yes, it could be that. And you have a mem, you know, and a lamb, which is life by guidance.
Wow. Cleansing by guidance and a life by leadership, through leadership.
Yeah, the only difference
and the
is
Torah,
we have that
the Torah is guidance and leadership.
Yeah.
That's what the Torah is.
Right. So, I mean, you don't have to observe very far.
That isn't where I was going, but it's the right place to go. No, I'm going to say, no, don't be sorry. What I'm admitting here is that I was going in a different direction, but the direction that you have taken us is a better one.
Well, perhaps. That's a different one.
Yahweh has chosen circumcision, and he didn't say circumcision, did he? He said mul.
Mul. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. M-W-L is what he said.
Right.
So he said M-W-L, mul, is the sign of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is incumbent upon us, if we want to understand the sign, is to look at the letters that comprise the word and to look up the verbal root of the word, the actionable root of the word, and you just did both.
Mm-hmm.
So to see it as a sign, you've got to recognize the symbols on the sign. The symbols and mul are three. Life-giving and cleansing, that's the M. The W is to increase, to secure, to enlarge a family home. The tent peg, the W.
Mm-hmm.
And the L is by way of the shepherd, the leadership of the shepherd, the shepherd's ability to protect and to nourish and to lead and to guide sheep.
All the above, right.
Yep. So that's the pictures. If you're going to observe the sign of circumcision, you would have to look at the pictures that are on that sign, and those are the three pictures. So we have life-giving and life-sustaining. We have that which empowers, that which enlarges, that which secures a family home by way of the shepherd's leadership, the shepherd's guidance, the shepherd's protection. That's the sign. I happen to like the shepherd. I happen to trust the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
The shepherd is Yahweh.
Right.
Happy to be in his flock.
Good.
And the whole cleansing and life-sustaining nature of water is good by me, too. I'm in need of being perfected. I'm in need of eternal life. And, of course, the idea of the wah, which is the middle letter in his name, which speaks of the tent peg, which enlarges and secures the home.
Right in the middle of that.
Yeah, right in the middle of Haya, the verb that he tells us defines who he is, that defines his name. That which is eternal, always existing. Haya. So there you have it. That's the signs. Those are the symbols on the sign. And then the actionable root of the word means to endure, to endure continuously.
Mm-hmm.
And via the word. So, yeah, these are enduring words that cause us to live forever.
Forever, right.
Yeah. So that's what you find when you look at the root.
Yeah, Yahweh wants you to do this. I've absolutely come to the same conclusion that you did much sooner, that he really wants you to dig it out. It's not that hard to dig it out. You just have to look at it. You just have to look
right. And I think he does for lots of reasons. One is if coming to know him isn't a priority to you, then I don't think he wants you in his home. You know, if you go through life and your 75th priority is getting to know the creator of the universe, I just think his interest in such individuals is really low.
Well, I've had students where they don't show up, you know, or they just take it so casual. I just, you know, when we have you, I tell them, you know, we have a waiting list. If you really don't want to come here, I don't want to take your money. Well, why are you?
Yeah.
Both are our times.
Right. Yeah. Why are you doing that? So if it isn't a priority, if you're not willing to prioritize getting to know God, then he's not going to, has no interest in investing in you. And getting to know you. The next, because this is really serious stuff. We're talking about being empowered so many fold we can't even imagine it. We're talking about inheriting everything the creator of the universe has to give. We're talking about living forever. We're talking about bearing the creator's name. We're talking about him becoming our teacher forever. So, I mean, these are extraordinary things that we have been offered, and they ought not be engaged in casually. It would be like, in fact, an extreme of this. Imagine, if you will, getting in a bulldozer, powerful caterpillar bulldozer, and while you're in that caterpillar bulldozer, you set the throttles full forward, and then you close your eyes. Then you go off and you say, you know, while this thing is running, I'm going to go and read a book on trains. You know, while this is happening, I think I'm going to have a glass of wine and maybe eat my dinner. You're not paying attention. You're going to do some serious damage. People are going to die. People are going to be hurt. Things are going to be destroyed. Well, Yahweh was offering us something vastly more powerful than the bulldozer. And if we're not paying attention, bad things can happen. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Jason back, and you know, it's not very often that someone calls in that says something that it just causes you to say, wow, why didn't I see that before? That is profound. And Jason, you did that yesterday. That we realized that Yahusha, as he was giving these insights to his disciples, that every one of his insights was specifically directed at Christianity. Not to support it, but to completely undermine it, including its profession of faith. And all you have to do is remove the unjustified and errant quotations from many will say, I am the Messiah. And realize that in the Greek, it's many will say, I am the Christ. And yet they will mislead many. It was brilliant that all you do is take the quotation marks away and have it be that he's saying, you know, they're going to call me the Christ, but they'll lead multitudes astray by doing so.
Right. So therefore, acknowledging that he's the Messiah can't be sufficient, yeah. Therefore.
Correct. And we have to recognize that he spoke Hebrew. If you want to understand really what he said in the so-called Christian New Testament, all you've got to work with, you can't go to anything Paul wrote because Paul never quoted him. Never. So you can't have to discount or completely disregard half of the Christian New Testament, all 13 books written by Paul, plus the book Hebrews that was under one of his underlings wrote. So you have to discard all of that. And once you've discarded all of that, you really only have four books that were that purport to be narratives of what Yahusha said and did. And only two of those were written by disciples, by those who accompanied him, who were actual witnesses to what he said and did. The other two were written by those who got all their information hearsay, Mark and Luke. So, and you also have to realize that unlike rabbis who strove to be extraordinarily accurate in their copies of the Torah, and, you know, with the rabbinical Talmud, not Talmud, but the rabbinical Masoretic text, you find about one word in 13 is changed from the oldest versions, from the Dead Sea Scrolls. In Christianity, with their New Testament, you have more changes than there are words. There are over 300,000 changes to a document that has a fraction that number of words. So you have to be careful that, that recognize that what you're reading has been heavily edited by people who thought that it was okay for them to change it.
Right.
And then you have to realize that it's what you're reading it in English, that's a translation of the Greek. And that when you're reading the Greek, it's not what was said. Never spoke Greek. That's a translation of what was said in Hebrew. And so if you're going to make any sense of it, you really have to translate the Greek into Hebrew and then the Hebrew into English so that you can accurately reflect what he said. Are there quotation marks in Hebrew?
No.
No. Even if you were writing in Greek and you wanted to reflect a quotation, could you?
I'm not that familiar with Greek, but I remember you saying yesterday that
you know, there is no ancient language that had quotation marks. Not Latin, not Greek, not Hebrew, not Aramaic. Most of them didn't even have question marks. A question was determined by putting an interrogative at the beginning of a sentence. It's in Hebrew, it's a ma. And if a sentence in Hebrew begins as a ma, you don't necessarily have to translate the ma as a word, although you can translate it very often on one of the seven English question words, you know, who, what, why, when, where, or which. Gives you the English question words, but it tells you that you need to conclude, you need to write this statement as a question, and we do that by putting a question mark at the end of it. It's seeking an answer. So there is no such punctuation. There's not even a period in Hebrew. You know, the wa is used to say, we're going to add something now, so that was the conclusion of the previous thought. So he could not have conveyed this in such a way that would justify the quotations, the quotation marks. So he just simply said, they will say I'm the Christ, and they will mislead many. We have both Kirk and Jason on the line. You know, it's interesting, fellas, that beginning in Matanya, and Matanya is one of the two eyewitnesses. He was a disciple, if we want to transliterate the Greek term, if we want to convey what that means. He was one who was taught by the ultimate teacher, the one who, as the living embodiment of the Torah, was the living embodiment of Yahweh's teaching. In Matanya 23, there really is only one subject, and that is a direct condemnation of religious leaders, their hypocritical behavior, the fact that they lie, that the religion of Judaism, which at the time was Pharisaic Judaism and is still Pharisaic Judaism, is a con job. They're all playing religion, and he condemns them. You know, he says, you know, it's hypocrites. They make long prayers just to be seen. You know, woe to you. You religious leaders, you fundamentalist religious leaders, you're hypocrites, he says. You're blind guides, you're fools, you're blind men. He said the same thing that I said of the woman who was promoting religious respect in the conference. And it is in that context that we find this this statement about Yosha. You know, he is telling all who will listen that there will be those who say that he is the Christ, that will call him Christ, and yet they're going to mislead many. He even calls these people a brood of vipers. Not that complicated, is it?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. And then it emphasizes the importance of the prophets, because you know, now all of a sudden, just knowing or acknowledging that Yosha is Messiah,
right?
It doesn't, you know, that's not sufficient. There's still
not only is that not sufficient, it's erroneous. It's counterproductive. You know, this statement, you know what he said at the beginning of this conversation? He said, and Yosha answered, which means he's providing answers to them. And he said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. See to it that no one misleads you. Kirk, when you hear that, see to it that no one misleads you, how would you see to it that no one misleads you?
Well, I have to know what the truth is, and you only can play, so you have to be knowledgeable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
He said, see to it that no one misleads you. The only way that you can pay attention to and understand and comply with that instruction from Yosha is to study the Torah. Mm-hmm. See to it that no one misleads you. You know, when he provided answers, when anybody asked him a question, he always went to the Torah.
Yeah.
To give the answer. He says, why are you asking me? You read the Torah. What does the Torah say? He said, see to it that no one misleads you. And it's no one that misleads you. Because, of course, there was one that misled billions. For many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. Boy, you take
that covers a lot more ground than the other.
Yeah, and this is actually a subquote. You've got quotation marks inside of quotation marks. Now what you're saying is that those who call him the Christ, so the very first thing, you know, he says, speak to it that no one misleads you. And the very first thing on the list, I'm going to go with the notion that Yosha was reasonably bright.
Good. Okay. I'm with you.
A reasonable call?
Reasonable call.
You think that Yosha, if he's going to explain that, explain how you go about not being misled, that he's going to start with the number one way that people are going to be misled, or is he going to start with something that's kind of irrelevant to the point he was making?
Number one.
Yep. What is the number one way that people around the world have been misled? What's the most popular religion in the world?
Christianity.
Ones that religion that says that he's the Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
Called themselves by that name.
Right.
So he started with the single most misleading thing that man has ever conceived, which is the religion of Christianity. It qualifies for misleading many, doesn't it? You know, when you said that, Jason, that pronouncing that Jesus is the Christ, which is the statement of profession of faith for Christians, that it isn't sufficient. And I said, no, that's not enough. I said it's counterproductive. When he says that they will claim that he is the Christ and will mislead many, and he just said, don't be misled, that means that calling him the Christ is counterproductive. It's going to take you away from the truth.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're getting the words wrong. So, and that, I wouldn't say there would be counterproductive to, acknowledge his, he was sort of the fulfillment of that role.
You know, I'm not even so sure. You know, this, I'm gonna, can I play,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm not gonna be devil's advocate here, but I have always been uncomfortable with, and maybe this is why,
mm-hmm.
using the term even Messiah. And I won't use the term Christ unless it is to degrade it because it means drugged. But I don't very often even use the term Messiah, which is the, you know, 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh uses as a proper noun the word and name Messiah. Messiah, from which we get Messiah, is never used as a noun. It's never used as a title. Even in the book of Daniel, which is forecasts, prophesies the exact day that he would come into Jerusalem to be cut down on Pesach, 500 years in advance, predicting that he would come into Jerusalem as he did 4 days before Pesach in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE in our pagan calendars. Even that presentation doesn't use the title Messiah or even HaMashiach. So I've always perplexed by its this elevation of the name in the religion that is a translation of the of what the title is supposed to mean, because it's not used as a title.
Doesn't it just simply mean, though, the work of Yah?
Implement of Yah is what Messiah means, but Messiah is not actually the word. First, we don't know what's written in that in Daniel 9. We don't know because we don't have it stamped in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So we don't know if it's Messiah or Messiah. We do know that Messiah is used as a adjective to mean one who is set apart and devoted to serve. Then it's an adjective modifying messenger as a messenger elsewhere, and that's how it's written in the Masoretic. But the fact is that of the terms that Yahweh chose to convey his mission and identity in corporeal form, Yahusha is the name. Yahusha is the mission statement.
All right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he uses Yahusha 220 times.
Yeah, in the witness writings too. I think the term he used for himself the most was Ben Adam.
Yeah, you're right. Ben Adam, son of Ben. Why? Because this was a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. The only thing that made him any aspect of him Yahweh was the set apart spirit. The same thing that makes any of us the children of Yahweh. And so I've always thought that emphasizing Messiah, Messiah, or most certainly emphasizing Christ, would lead you in the wrong direction. You know, you ought not even emphasize Yahusha. What did he tell us about this relationship between paying attention to him and paying attention to the Father?
Go to the Father.
So, you know, you've got a whole religion that's focused on the diminished manifestation. Even if they got his title right, their focus is still wrong. If what you're going to say, guys, is that Jesus is the Messiah, then you don't have a clue who God is, and you don't have a clue as to what he said.
Yeah,
that acknowledgement it tells you that your focus is wrong. That's what it says.
Yeah. When I read that, the way I looked at it was, and I'm not disagreeing with you here. It's probably a big overemphasis on Messiah, and it may refer to anyone that does the work of Yah, you know. But when I read it, I was thinking more along the lines of how you sometimes describe false tactics, where he would attach his false doctrine to the truth. He would attach his doctrine to something that is legitimate, and by that way, would many be deceived?
Yeah. You know, Jason, first what I thought you discovered here is a brilliant insight. And I don't think we are disagreeing with each other in this. What I think is that your original assumption, and I think it is accurate, that this is a statement that is designed as the first and foremost to completely undermine the basis of the Christian religion, so that anyone paying attention to Yosha is not misled by the Christian religion. I think that's first and foremost, and that was your point.
Mm-hmm.
My first reaction is the point you just made. This is speaking about Paul. Paul claimed that he was the Christ over and over and over and over again, and he misled more people than anyone in human history. That was my first reaction, and that's also true.
Wow.
Yep.
But I think my point is also valid. It's interesting to me, reinforcing something that I've come to conclude, which is that Messiah, Messiah are not titles. It goes to reason that if Yahweh wanted to predict his arrival based upon the fulfillment of a title, then he would have used that title in a prophecy. And he didn't. So this is something that just reinforces a conclusion that I've come to from the evidence. But I would ask you, both Kirk and Jason here, are you aware of many people, and I can name one or two, who claim to be sort of a junior Messiah? They didn't really claim to be full Messiah, but there's a couple of people in history that have claimed to be the Messiah, and they had very, very small followings.
Mm-hmm.
If you study history, which you guys have both done, are you aware of many people claiming to be the Messiah and that those people had extremely large followings?
No.
I
wouldn't know a lot of research on the subject, but there's, you know, if there was, it was not that significant, or, you know.
Yeah. So either Yosha lied and he got this prophecy wrong, or the quotations are wrong.
Yeah, and usually when Yah too speaks, I kind of jokingly that Yah tends to, understate things.
Yeah.
So when
right.
he says many, I mean, he means many.
Many. Right. This is the first priority. This is the biggest mislead. This is the thing most prone to mislead the most people. And you think that could be something as irrelevant as a handful of people over time having tiny little followings that evaporated once the individual proved to be a fake? Zero possibility. There is no chance whatsoever that the sub-quotation marks that Christian publishers have added here are accurate based on that alone. But have there been many people who claim to speak in Jesus' name? How many Christian prayers are answered in the name of Jesus?
Amen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They all come in the name of Jesus. And how many claim that he is the Christ? All of them.
Yep.
And so it's 100% certain,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Jason, that that you're right.
No,
it's not open to interpretation. In fact, it says here, many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. And Torah-lessness will be increased. And most people's love will grow cold.
Direct hit.
Direct hit at Pauline Christianity.
We sunk your battleship.
We just sunk your battleship, man. It's over. I've said so many times, if Christians actually listened to and thought about what Yosha said, they wouldn't be Christians. You can't be a Christian if you know what Yosha said and did.
me think of this. May I make a quick comment?
Sure.
Now that Jason's opened up this can of worms, I was thinking during the break about how subtle the deception is, even with Jesus. You know, we have Jesus saves everywhere. And you have to change his name from Yahushua, because Yahushua means Yahweh saves. And that little,
yes,
that little simple change.
Right. Correct. Is everything.
Hugely dramatic. It's as much as the Messiah. Messiah.
Yeah,
it
is. It's
true.
Yes, it is. It's dramatic. You know, when you're using Yahusha, at least what you're stating is accurate.
Yes.
Yahusha means Yahweh saves.
Totally.
No, it's completely. Yeah, the problem of the. I mean, there's a thousand problems with the religion of Christianity. But one of those problems is that it's focused on the diminished manifestation, turning the diminished manifestation into God, as opposed to on Yahweh himself, instead of on God.
Yeah. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but all he promised to Moses is, I'm going to send somebody down like you, like Moses is, that can talk to you face to face and not scare you to death.
Great.
I just been able to look briefly at Matthew. I seem to recall that maybe when the angel, the Malach, was speaking to the Yahusha's earthly mother, that he may have mentioned Messiah. But, could be wrong there.
Yeah, I don't think so. But, we don't have any prophecy using Messiah as a title, or any derivation of Messiah as a name or a title. There's a reason for that. Hope you guys can both join us tomorrow. May Yah bless.